I've got a quick question for you, alright? I wanna hear your thoughts, I wanna know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you, alright? The answer's not important, I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite?
How did you get?
If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here. Yeah. I think you'll have a great time here. Yeah.
So, hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I am one half of that podcast. Last week tonight with John Oliver's Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host, American Dad, Soren Boris. Soren, say...
Sometimes my son on his bike will be riding so fast, and then I see that front tire start to like wiggle a little, and I'm like, oh, he's fucked. He's going too fast, and then he just eats shit.
It's, you know what the thing is? I don't have great diction, and I'm not doing myself... There are some... Like, comedy writer is difficult for me to say, and it's in every intro, yeah. Sometimes twice.
Yeah.
So, like, when I'm...
Man. I will say hello now, though,
yeah,
if you like.
No, right. we're... I mean, we got it. That's the thing when you're dealing with a professional, is that we got it in one.
Wait, one take, Daniel. One take. That's what it would say on your license plate if you knew what a car was. Hawthorne is a premium grooming brand that tailors your personal care routine to your unique profile, with skincare and hair care made just for you. Take Hawthorne's quiz today and get started on your personalized self-care routine at hawthorne.co and use promo code QQ to get 10% off your first purchase. This episode of Quick Question is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. For 10% off your first month, go to betterhelp.com/QQ. Start living a better life today. Hello, I'm Soren Bowie. I am a complicated man, a man who flushes at the thought of calling himself a man or even a guy, because those are loaded words frequently used to excuse or even lionize aggression and emotional unavailability. And those are two things that I am trying hard to untether from my own life, from my own heart. What else? I fuck with wood.
This new thing you're doing.
Yeah.
It's
funny, right?
Have they both started with complicated man so far?
Yes.
Okay. Is that's by design?
Yeah, I think it's, yeah. This one like touches on it, but just calling myself a man, I think, is very funny, but also calling myself a complicated man. Anybody calling themselves a complicated man is so full of shit and in such like an aggrandizing way that I really enjoy doing it.
It's once you were launching into this one, I thought, is this? I guess I should just let him tucker himself out. He's clearly got a plan. But am I gonna have to do this every week now? I guess we'll find out.
You might have to wait through them. Yeah, yeah. Maybe they'll get longer. I haven't decided yet.
Yeah, I think it'll probably be. This is just a note for future us. It'll probably make for better podcast fodder if I am listening to
you. I kind of enjoy the silence that follows it, because there is nothing to say after somebody does this.
So it's not you're not leaving breadcrumbs for me to pick up and deal with, because you hit a certain tone and I'm like, let's see what's going on Instagram. Let's see what my other computer has to say.
You are the best case scenario is that there's a long pause and then you go, so I'm going back to that that dance class online or whatever else you're doing. Like, just not even acknowledging it, I think, is the most fun. There's no expectation from you on these.
Yeah.
I really come around on my cat,
Dave. Oh, good.
Yeah. So for a while, I don't know if I told you, there was my cat's kind of an indoor-outdoor cat, and there was one night where I couldn't find her. And I was kind of like looking around for her. And my biggest concern was, oh, this is going to look really bad if we haven't even had this cat a year and it dies. My concern was not like, oh no,
a member of my family.
Yeah, it was, I don't know how to explain this to people. I don't know. Like, this is going to be rough. But I found her. And I will say that since then, she's really grown on me. It is more like having a roommate than a pet, because you don't have to do a lot with a cat. They're, yeah. I would say, like the easiest pet you could possibly have. I feed her twice a day. I make sure she's got dry food whenever she wants it. And then whenever she wants to go outside, I let her outside. When she wants to come inside, I let her inside. And other than that, I don't dictate her schedule. Like, she gets to do what she wants to do. Yeah. And she clearly has her own like things that she wants to get done. And that's fine. We get along really well. When she comes inside, she'll come and check me out. And I'll be like, hey, give her some pets for a while. And then she's like, listen, I'm going to go lay down up on the couch upstairs. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds great.
I have found that I have never really had any desire to have cats. And I get that they're not like a cuddly thing and they're not a fun thing often, but they're still very novel to me. So when I was at my friend's house the other day, and she has two cats, and I'm just watching them do things. And at one point it was just like stretching, doing one of those cat stretches, mm-hmm. where its back goes super high. It's very different than dog stretches. And I saw it. And I'm just like, ah, just like a real, like very human physical laugh coming out of me. And she's like, what's going on? I'm like, what's it doing? I'm like, oh, it's just cat stuff. I'm just not used to seeing it. It's just like being a cat over there now. That's cool.
Our cat also, Colleen got sick for a little while, like really sick, where she was in bed for a whole day. And the cat just went up there and just stayed with her the whole day in a way where I was like, oh fuck, that cat knows. And she was just like, oh, you're hurting? I'll be here for you. Whatever you need, I'll be right here. And I was like, this is a good cat.
Yeah. What's your cat's name again? Isis?
Davina.
Davina.
Davina. Boy, is that a terrible name to call late at night when I need her to come back in. The streets are silent, and then I have to go out there and be like, oh, okay, oh, fuck it. Davina. Psst, 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 psst. Davina. Hawthorne is a premium grooming brand that tailors your personal care routine to your unique profile. Hawthorne uses data from hundreds of thousands of customers to recommend perfect products for your body chemistry, your skin type, your hair type, and your lifestyle. Everybody's different. Like, I don't want to say snowflake. I think that term's gotten, it's become like an epithet. I think maybe like a fingerprint. We're all like fingerprints. We're all big, greasy fingerprints that you find on like a glass window. We're all just a little bit different. Everybody's got different chemistry. Everybody's got different skin type. Everybody's got different microbiomes. And Hawthorne knows that. They're going to make sure that their product is perfectly attuned to whatever's going on in your system. Upgrade your products that help you, like your body wash, shampoo, deodorant, face cleanser, moisturizer, and cologne. Just take a short study back quiz and get matched with your perfect grooming kit. You get free shipping on your Hawthorne order. And if you decide you're not satisfied with your product, they'll give you free shipping on your return as well. I took their quiz. It was easy. They asked me some questions. I gave them my answers. They said, you're this body type. They said, what are you looking for in a deodorant? And I said, I never thought about that before. I just sort of picked one. It was great. And by the end, they said, these are the best products suited for you and what you want in the world. There's ones that you can get that are better for the environment. There are ones you can get that are better for your body. You can get all natural deodorant. You can get anything you want. And at the end, they send you an essentials bundle with all the products tailored to your body type and lifestyle. Right now, if you went into my bathroom, you would say, wow, this guy's got a lot of products, but I like them all. I like every single thing that Hawthorne has sent me. Hawthorne has not sent me anything, and I thought, I can live without this. I like everything that they've sent. I've got shampoo. I've got conditioner. I've got eye cream from them. I've got lotions. I've got both a hand lotion and a face lotion, which you learn as an adult are two different things. Fascinating. So make sure you're ready for anything or anyone that comes your way by taking Hawthorne's quiz today. Go to hawthorne.co and use promo code QQ to get 10% off your first purchase. That's HAWTHORNE.co. Promo code QQ. Hawthorne.co. Promo code QQ.
Oh, should we get into the show?
Yeah, I think we should do it.
Okay, I got a quick question for you. It's more like, I don't know, six paragraphs of content or whatever. Is that...
That's all we've ever done. Somebody sent me a tweet that said that we are sort of quasi in the New York Times because Quick Question was one of the answers in the New York Times, a crossword puzzle. And I was like, what was the question? The thing they never actually get around to doing on the show? The premise is a question, but it never really is about the question.
No. So this question, a little backstory. Last year I was looking for a winter rental in this area where I'm living now. And I contacted a realtor. Her name was Effie, and she helped me out. She doesn't normally do short-term rentals, but she made an exception for me, and which is very fair and helpful. And I did let her know that whenever I do look for a house, she would be the person that I want to work with. And ended up at a different time meeting a second realtor named Melissa last year, because I was in two different rentals. And even Melissa, I told her, I was like, hey, I'm not looking to buy a house. But I am in a committed realtor relationship with Effie if I ever do buy a house. And I still don't even know if I'm ready to buy one. But when I was settling into this town this year, I saw a condo on Zillow right in the heart of town. And I was very casually like, let me look into it. I'm in town. Let me make an appointment to wander over and look at this place and like explore. I don't know. A, if I want to buy anything. I extra don't know if I want to buy a condo, but I got shit else to do. Let me go and check out a place. So I made an appointment, and then 3 days later, I got a call that the appointment's canceled because there was an offer put in on the house, on the condo already, and a backup offer from someone else if that first offer fell through.
Wow.
And they're no longer doing showings of this place. And then the person who gave me this information was a different realtor who was like, and by the way, this is how the market is right now. So you really shouldn't be just like showing up kind of curious. If you want to buy something, you should be prepared to make an offer like pretty much right away. So you should talk about that, talk over your finances or whatever. And then she showed me another listing for a place that was not a condo and not a house, not somewhere I wanted to live and not the kind of house I wanted. But I was so panicked from this first condo thing. I was like, well, fuck, it's such a buyer's market. Should we just get it? Should I just take this house? It was, and now things have, I didn't take that house, but things have snowballed from that conversation so fast. And I want to know if that was at all similar to your experience. Cause like, this is now this third realtor I was talking to, she was the one who was like, you need to be serious if you want to buy something. And just in the middle of talking with her, like a day after that conversation, Effie reached out to me, the initial realtor I spoke to a year ago. And she was like, hey, I heard you were looking at houses in my area. What's going on? I was like, Jesus Christ. I didn't know you all talked to each other, and I'm just kidding. I don't even know how serious I am about this. And I don't want to like make you guys fight. And one of the realtors backed off and was like, okay, Effie's your girl. I get it. I was like, yeah, I guess Effie's my girl, but like, I now have total loyalty to this realtor. And now Effie is, I told her, I'm like, hey, I've got like, I'm in this rental property now for a year, so I'm definitely not looking for anything immediately, if I'm looking for anything at all. And she's like, that's great. I'm going to just keep sending you listings every week now anyway, and ask you how you think about them. And also, you should know, you could talk to me to find out like what kind of house you want and where you want to be, but you should also talk to, I guess, a lender to find out what you can afford. I can hook you up with that person, and you should also talk to this third kind of person, and I can hook you up with that person. So now I've had multiple meetings with people whose jobs I'm not even completely sure of. Just like a stranger calls me on the phone and was like, hey, Effie gave me your contact information. Tell me how much money you have right now. And I'm just like, okay, I guess this is normal. And she is, I guess, figuring out what I can afford around here. It's all happening very fast, Soren.
Well, okay. Your experience is not abnormal.
Okay.
That's the way it generally goes. And if, especially you live in a city or like a place that's desirable, yeah, the houses go so, so fast. And it is really terrifying. But she's absolutely right that you need to get a lender's approval first. You just need to get somebody who will be like, hey, we will give you a mortgage. Here's like a rate that we'll lock right now. And you don't have to even necessarily go with them. You're just getting the approval at that point. And if you have the approval, that's how you, that's, then you're allowed to go out and shop for a house. Because then the minute you see a house, you have to be like, oh, this is fine. I'll put an offer in. And you put the offer in. And then if it comes to the point where they're like, all right, well, they're willing to accept your offer. That's when you're like, okay, now do I really want this house?
Yeah.
Because it does move so, so quickly.
You have to be aggressive. And I'm looking at things. I'm like, well, you know, it's farther away from the beach that I want to be. It's not exactly in the sun. There are no windows. It's $650,000 more than I want to pay. But should we do it? Should we just be aggressive? Should we get it?
That's pretty common as well, is that a real estate agent, you're right, they do all know each other. Even in Los Angeles, which is a huge, like, gigantic, sprawling city. Every time that whoever's selling the house, they're working with a real estate agent. And then anyone who's buying is working with a real estate agent. So as soon as you show interest, they're like, all right, well, who's your agent? And we'd be like, oh, it's Richard Schulman. And they'll be like, oh yeah, Richard. Oh, he's great. Like, they all know each other. Like, they all know each other. And so in a town like that, of course, or that area like that, of course, they're all going to talk. And they may probably even go to dinner and stuff like that. Because they're on the same business. It's like fun to talk shop. Maybe they've got podcasts.
Oh.
But that's all very, very common. And then the other thing that's crazy about it, like, my brother's trying to do this because he's moving right now. He's moving to the Midwest and they're doing it remotely. They're trying to buy a house remotely. So they have a real estate agent that basically just puts them on FaceTime and walks them through the house, which is so inconvenient and tough, but you just get a sense of the layout. At least you get to see the pictures online, you get a sense of the layout. And then afterwards she'll be like, I didn't want to say it while we were in there, but you can't live there. You never get rid of that smoke smell. And they go, thank you. That's a great tip. We would never have known that. But you know, he's putting offers in on places. And then if their offer is accepted, or they're even like in contention, and you know you're in contention because they'll come back and they'll say, we have a couple of other offers, and that's pretty much all they'll say. And they're like, what it means is, do you want to raise? Do you want to like up your offer? And so then you've got to do that, and you don't know what the other offer is at all. You're just guessing. And you're like, all right, well, I guess I could go up to like this high, but I'm not going to say I'm going to go that high. I'll say what happens if I put like 10 or 20,000 more on this. And then sometimes you get it, sometimes they're like, they'll come back to you again. And I think, I don't know totally what the ethics of it are, if they're like, if there are other people interested, and even if the other offers are lower than yours, if they're still like, hey, we got other offers, just to see if you'll go higher.
Yeah,
you're really in the dark on a lot of it. But once that happens, and like you get to that situation, you've done it on like 5 or 6 houses at a time, where you're like, okay, which house was this? And then you've got to go figure out if this is somewhere you want to spend the next 7 years of your life and invest the most money you've ever invested in anything. Like, if you want to go into debt for this place.
Yeah.
And that's all before you ever do like the inspection or anything like that. You're just trying to remember even the layout. And you're like, okay, now I have to actually consider if I could see myself living here. Like,
right.
What were the situation? Okay, so let's see. The only garage access I see is through the master bedroom closet. That's interesting. Okay, maybe I could make that work.
And like, it's been so long since we toured it. It had floors, right?
It can really, you can start to like really talk yourself into a place where afterwards, when you don't get it, you're like, oh, you know what? Thank God. Thank God I didn't get that place. That would have been terrible. I don't think I could have lived like that. But you could just, in the same way where everybody's moving so fast that you're like, oh, I should get whatever there is. I'll take this.
Yeah.
I remember that feeling well. And whoever your real estate agent is, you're going to be like, I want to live here. Here's my price range. Here's the kind of place I'm looking for. And they'll be like, great. I've got a place 60 miles from there that's $650,000 more than you're willing to spend. And they'll give you those instead. Because
first thing that she sent me was, not in this town. And like, again, I don't know shit from fuck. And I don't even know if I'm in a position to do it. But if I've said anything like price agnostic, I was like, I love this town. I am in love with this town.
Yeah.
I want to get something in this town. That is my number one priority if I'm going through my list of things. And immediately she's like, well, this isn't in the town, but it's in a worse town, and it's a steal. I'm like, no.
Yeah, that's going to that'll happen the entire time.
Get me desperate first. Like, we might show me a year of property in this town that I can't get, and then, like, work my way into how about Texas or whatever.
I'm very lucky in that Colleen, this is basically one of her superpowers. She's so good. And also, she puts a lot of work into it. I don't want to belittle how she got this skill. But she's very good at determining great neighborhoods that are going to pop at any minute. And then knowing, like, the type of house for that neighborhood that's going to be the best you can get. And she's so, so good at it in a way where, like, I just toddled along behind her like a child, where I was like, oh, we're going to a showing today? Okay, great. Yeah. And she knows it so well in a way that where we were getting a lot of those things from our real estate agent, where he'd be like, yeah. I also don't want to besmirch him. He's great. He's outstanding. But he'd be like, what about in the valley? Don't you want to live in the valley? And we'd be like, no, yeah. I don't want to live there. Well, there's a couple of houses there. Why don't you just go look at them? And she'd be like, no, this is the area. And she would find these listings. She'd be like, I know that this house is going to have an open house coming up soon because it just got listed. We're going to that. And like, it wouldn't even be something that he found. It was just like, she would do it. And she knew where she wanted to be. And she was so good at it. And you kind of have to be that. You got to know, once you get familiar with the area on Redfin or Zillow, you can tell when a house, like a new house pops up. And you can like jump on it quickly. You can go make sure you get to see it early. Ask your real estate agent about it. And sometimes even before they do like the general showing, they'll just give you a private showing. And that's probably how you got undercut these other time, where some of you, like, even before you got to see it, they're like, oh, we've already got a buyer in mind and a backup.
Yeah.
But it's like a big part of it too, is knowing how much you could spend and how much you can put down. Like, that's a huge piece of making sure that you actually get one of the places. I don't know how interesting this is for our listeners, but it's
interesting to me. And, you know, the podcast could always do to have more listeners. So we might convert me this time. We might spin this into another subscriber. Who knows? Because one of the things that I go back and forth on, in addition to all of this, like the biggest, broadest thing in the world is like, do I even want to buy a house? And I mostly think I do, but I also don't know why I think that. I mean, like, because equity stuff.
It's a big, like, broad strokes. It is a really good investment, with the exception of 2008. It is generally a good investment. It's you almost always, they appreciate. And you're going to put a lot of money into it, but you will, by the time you want to, like, leave it, you will also make some money. It's not as cost beneficial for you to rent as it is for you to just have a mortgage, because whatever you put down on the house, you will make back later when you sell it. And so the problem is like convincing everywhere that you go, you're going to be in contention with people who are going to flip, and like all they want to do is buy the house so that they can turn it profit immediately, as opposed to 7 or 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road when you would do it. And so they're going to offer, like, they've got a ton of money just waiting to put into houses. So when they see a place, they'll be like, we can offer this much cash. And like that, we'll whatever, like, they'll say, this is how much we'd pay for the house. We will give 60 to 100% down. And like, that's, you know, no one who's selling the house is going to turn that down, because they'll get through escrow really quickly.
Yeah.
And so to compete with them.
And no normal person, because you're saying it's people with a lot of money. It's like hedge funds and stuff. It's like,
yeah. And all you have to do is have that cash in your bank. You don't even have to actually do it that way. Basically, I don't think you want to spend all your money. The way that Colleen and I cheated the system early on when we first bought a house was that we asked our parents to put in a fairly large sums of money into our accounts briefly, so that we could show that we had a bunch of money that we could go 50% down on a house. And so we would say, we want to buy this house and we're going to go, we want to offer 50% down. And then if you get the house, you're not beholden to that number at all. And you can be like, at the end, then when you're going through escrow, you can be like, actually, I'm going to do 25. So the minute that like we had a place, we just gave that money back to our parents.
But what if you were selling the house to me and I said, I want to go with these people who are going to give me 50% right now.
Yeah.
And then you didn't.
Yeah.
Wouldn't I be mad at you?
I think you would, yeah. I think that's probably pretty accurate.
And wouldn't I be right to be mad at you?
Yes. But okay. As long as the house gets through, I think the only reason you would want them to actually do it is because it's a guarantee that they have the money for the house and it's not going to fall out of escrow and you have to start all over. That looks really bad for the seller. When a house falls out of escrow, they don't have to tell you why it fell out of escrow. And usually when houses fall out of escrow, it's because somebody did an inspection and there was something fundamentally wrong in the inspection and the buyer backed out. So it always looks like that if a house falls out of escrow. So like they just want to get through it. And so even if you're like, well, we're going to do 20% down, but like it's still going really well, they'll be like, okay, whatever, just buy the house.
Okay. And they still get, Jesus, they still get all their money. How do that, what guarantees because that they get their money? The bank?
The bank, yeah. Okay. Whoever they're getting the lending from, they're going to get it all at once no matter what.
Okay.
It just shows that you're most likely, your loan won't fall through with the bank if you're offering to put a bunch of extra money down. They're not like getting that money over time. It's all just going to the bank and then the bank technically owns your house and you're just paying it off.
Yeah.
In a weird way. That's not totally true. I mean, it's your house, but you're paying the bank to live in your house.
Sure.
But I don't envy you in this situation because it's so you feel completely helpless when you're trying to buy a house.
And they really, the world sets you up if you've been renting apartments since 2007. It really seems like anything new is such a huge hassle and adjustment.
Yes.
And like all that stuff about equity and like this is a good investment for you to flip and then have more money later. I just feel like, no, I'll rent apartments forever. And then when I die, I'll be debt free and no one will be mad at me. It's going to be fine. I don't need money.
Totally unrelated. Also, did you ever get a credit card, Dan?
No. Actually, speaking of credit cards, this is a brief, quick question aside.
Yeah.
Do you remember when we first started volunteering with kids, you and I, and no one did a background check or even like a last name check on us or anything?
Yes. Yes.
We're like, this is an irresponsible amount of trust.
Clearly an overlooked situation. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I started working at this this food pantry on day one, they're like, okay, good. You're here. You're going to pick up food. And they just gave me a credit card that I now just have.
Whoa.
It stays in my wallet. I use it to get food for the food pantry every week. But it's really, I think that has...
They didn't do anything.
I think it's bumped to the top of my line of irresponsible things that volunteer organizations have done.
Jesus, yeah, that's wild. I thought about that and I thought maybe it was just a times thing, like maybe times have changed. But because when I tried to volunteer at my son's school, they're like, okay, you just got to submit this information to the State Department. I'm like, what?
Wow.
Why? You have to like get clearance essentially to work with children so that there's a record of you. In case anything weird happens. And we didn't ever went through anything like that.
And we would just volunteer organizations. There's a tremendous amount of trust there and a tremendous amount of like, especially for what I'm doing, where I'm not interacting with kids or anything like that, where it doesn't seem like a scheme that anyone would do, you know, like, because I didn't know I was going to get a credit card to pick up the food. I thought I was going to be moving boxes and stuff.
Right.
So they must just assume, like, if they get an email from someone, a cold email from someone who's like, hey, I'm new to town and I want to volunteer, they just assume, yeah, this guy's not going to steal a credit card.
That's exactly the type of person that would steal a credit card.
They really looked down just wandered into town. They handed a credit card to me and I'm like, oh no, I don't trust those things. I'll use my own.
They must, maybe they saw something in you. The minute they saw you, they're like, yeah, he's fine. Oh, this is gonna, this surely will keep you up at night as well. Yeah. Ooh, Soren's back again asking you, what's keeping you from achieving success in your own life? What's keeping you from being happy? Every single time I come on here and I ask and you say, oh, stop asking me that question. Just leave me alone. Let me be unhappy by myself. No, I want to see you happier. I want to make sure that you're living your best life. Stress shows up in all kinds of ways, and in a world that's telling you to do more, sleep less, and grind all the time, here is a reminder to take care of yourself. Do less sometimes. Maybe try some therapy. People don't always realize the physical symptoms like headaches and teeth grinding and digestive issues and sweating more can all be indicators of stress. And let's not forget about the doom scrolling that we all do. That's taken over most of my life. When I get my report at the end of the week where it says, this is how much time you spent online, just on my phone alone, it's, I'd say, humiliating. And it costs me sleep. It means that when I'm looking at my screen before I go to bed, it's harder for me to fall asleep at night. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. BetterHelp is more affordable than in-person therapy, too. If you feel stressed out daily, if little things stress you out, like bills and life and family, if your stress is affecting your appetite, you might be a great candidate for BetterHelp. Stress is a huge problem in our current culture. We try to do too much, and BetterHelp wants to help you. It's in the name. Give BetterHelp a try and see if online therapy can help lower your stress. Our listeners get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/QQ. That's BETTERHELP.com/QQ for 10% off your first month. Well, Daniel, I have a quick question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to know, what's a trope or like a cinematic device, something from movies that you wish you could retire from the landscape of cinema forever? I'll give you some examples. Like,
okay, good.
Like someone saying, I just threw up in my mouth a little happens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Across films. There's someone hearing bad news and then throwing up, which also never happens in real life, but like happens a lot in movies. Women only throwing up when they're pregnant. There's lots of examples out there.
Sure, sure.
They're, not all of them are throwing up. What's something that you would retire from like the landscape of cinema because it's just so played out? I can also go first here.
Yeah, go first.
I don't understand why this happens, but everyone's so, they're weird fucking excited bewilderment about champagne doing what champagne does. Like, and people open a bottle of champagne in a movie because there's a celebration. And the cork pops and it fizzes out a little and everyone goes, whoa, whoa, whoa. Everyone's sort of amazed by that champagne can do that. Or the minute that they drink, they'll pour it into a glass. Someone will drink a little. Generally, it's a woman. And then she touches her nose. And why, Dan? Why does she touch her nose?
Bubbles?
Yeah, the bubbles tickle her nose, she says. Like, she's never had a carbonated drink in her whole fucking life.
Yeah.
And so champagne is this weird novelty in movies. I also blame movies that we use it for celebrations because, just like for the record, champagne is a shit drink.
Yeah. That's it's all not, like it's used strangely in movies as if the writers and actors are in like a big situation where they were little kids transformed into adult bodies because even if I'm at an event that is like an actual celebration, unless it's the like wedding toast where everyone has a glass of champagne by design. If it's anything else, if I was at a dinner party, my friends were like, great news. Should we celebrate champagne? I'm like, yeah, that's fine. Vodka soda for me, please.
Yeah.
I want to enjoy myself at this celebration. So I don't want to drink champagne cause I hate it.
I will do a thing where, if somebody orders like champagne for the table, should we get a champagne? I'm like, oh, okay. And then I will just turn my champagne glass over so that they know not to fill it because it is just wasted on me. I don't want champagne. I think it's gross. I think it's a bad drink. And there's other things I'd much rather be drinking. In films and stuff, it's always used as a celebratory drink. And it's even without a cheers, it's just like, oh, we should celebrate. And the situation is always the same. Somebody starts to cork it, they pop it, the cork flies, and a little bit comes out, and everyone's like, wow, did you know it was going to do that? I didn't know it was going to do that, is the general sentiment of it. That's not generally the dialogue. But then they pour it, and like one person drinks a little, and then does like a tee-hee, and I'm like, oh, it's so bubbly, or the bubbles tickle my nose, where it's, no, that doesn't happen. Everyone in the world has had a Coca-Cola in their lives. Before they've had champagne, it should not be a surprise. Anyway, that's mine. That's my gripe on films.
That's a good one. I thought you had another one that you wanted to do.
There is one more. It's when somebody's talking on the phone. Generally, they're in the middle of an argument, and then they hang up. A phone rings immediately, and they're like, I told you, I don't want to fucking sell, or like whatever it is. And they're like, oh no, it's not actually the person you thought you were going to talk to. It's the president, or it's somebody else really important, yeah, and somebody you should not be yelling at. And you just yelled at them. They do it with doors too, where like somebody keeps coming in and they're like, I don't want to talk to you, I don't want to talk to you. And then they leave, and then there's a knock, and they're like, I told you I don't want any fucking tea. And then no, it's King James. King James right. has come in.
It is. I latched onto that one as well, because it felt like that phone trope is something that I guess we really liked in the 90s when caller ID didn't exist and it was like a great device for writers. And then even though everything about the world has changed since then, it's like, no, but I want to do that. So let's pretend that in this movie, people answer their cell phones without looking at who is calling, which is start to finish insane.
The way that they move around it too is very fun, where they're like, well, they would, an ordinary person, a normal human being would look at their phone. Well, what can we do and make them so they can't see their phone? We'll have them driving. They'll be driving along and the phone will ring and they'll just push the on button.
Push the on button and start screaming.
Yeah.
Even though, like, I always look at who is calling before I pick up the phone, because otherwise you might get spam phone calls or talk to someone you don't want to talk. Like, there's never a situation where I'm so confident at who's calling that I pick up the phone without looking. B, I can't not look at who's calling when I pick up the phone, I guess, unless you're driving the car. And C, even if I did just hang up on someone and I saw they were calling me back, I wouldn't pick up and start yelling. I would just ignore the call. That's an even easier thing to do.
Way easier. Just not fight with somebody. And it says a lot more when you don't fight with somebody.
Yeah.
I want those gone.
I had one that was not a, not like a plot trope or anything like that. I saw a movie recently. I have a couple things to say about this movie. The Lost City. You know it?
Yeah, I know it, but I haven't seen it.
It's, really wanted to see it because I'm always excited for movies that aren't based on existing IP, and like, yeah, this is like an adult-ish adventure romance thing. Let's make more of those, more different kinds of movies, please. So I want to support it. My first thing that made me mad is just looking at tickets online before I got them and seeing a runtime of 1 hour and 54 minutes for this straightforward action romance comedy. I've said before on this podcast that movies are too long. Everyone has said it. It's not a new idea. It's not my idea, but I really feel it. And this time I did a thing that I haven't done with a movie before so far in my life that I might stick with, where I just decided I'm going to be late to this one. And I was late for the first like 10 minutes or so. And it's, I think going into it, I was like, this is a simple and straightforward enough movie that I don't really need to see the beginning of it. It's disrespectful to everyone involved. But they're disrespectful of my time for making this a 2-hour movie. And like, this is the deal that we're going to make. It's the same. Whenever I would have band practice with Cody Johnston and Abe Epperson and Brendan Carter back in LA, and Cody would reserve the recording studio for 5 fucking hours, I'd be like, that's great. I'm going to miss some of it because that's the push and pull that we have to deal with here. That's too much time. And I've got other stuff going on. I want to be part of this, but not this much. So I'm sorry. As far as I'm concerned, Lost City, you are a 90-minute movie.
And could you follow the plot?
Yes.
It's just like coming into it on HBO, right? There's not a single movie in the world that I can't get context for just from watching, like coming into it halfway through and being like, oh, no, I get it. I see what's going on.
But the trope in this movie, and it's less like a plot trope and more of a, I guess, technical trope that I'm seeing more and more of, is the amount of jokes and quips that happen ADR. For people who don't know, listening at home, ADR, I don't even know what it stands for. It's additional recording.
But why would they put the D in there?
I don't know. Additional dialogue recording. What it is, you've seen it in a million movies, especially comedies, and a way to spot it is your main characters will say something 90% of the time funny, and their mouths are not on screen. Their mouths are not moving. It's like a wide shot of Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum walking through the jungle, and they're just doing like quips back and forth. Usually, like, some of the funnier lines in the movie will happen in these things, and it happens because the whole movie gets made, and then they realize, hey, we need more jokes in this movie. We gotta just like write a whole bunch of jokes to try out, and you can't, we're not gonna like CGI people's mouths, so it's these jokes that just happen while people are walking away or a scene is transitioning, and I don't like it. I think I understand that it's very difficult to make a movie, and sometimes a movie gets made because you could say, we've got Sandra Bullock and we've got Channing Tatum, so that means we have a green light to get access to this money, and if we wait, we don't have access to the money, or if we wait, we don't have access to one of these stars, and then everything falls apart. You got to do whatever you got to do to greenlight a movie and get that money. But have a funny script first, and don't rely on like this second wave. All right, the movie's shot. Now let's see if we can make it the funniest thing in the world by bringing in a bunch of ringers to write jokes under the very specific circumstances that they can be sort of dropped anywhere and said after the movie's shot in like a post recording session. I don't like it for what it says for movies. I want like a movie to be written with jokes in it first, and I want people to be able to sign on to be in a movie and say, yes, this is funny, and that's why I'm doing it. And it's also just like an annoying thing to see, I think. There's like 25 scenes in the movie where Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum are doing jokes to each other with their backs to the audience.
This didn't even occur to me, by the way, that this is actually happening. It's, by the way, it's automated dialogue replacement, which I never would have gotten. Never would have gotten. But the fact that, I mean, they're filming with this in mind. They're doing like a master of, we're going to be like, all right, we're going to be super wide. We're going to be very, very wide, and we're just going to be watching them traipse through the jungle. And they're doing that, and they're like, they're not just doing that as like a establishing shot. They're like, and we're going to hold on this for the next half, maybe 30 seconds, maybe a minute, because at some point they are going to fill that. And it didn't even occur to me that that's actually part of it. That like, they're not, that wasn't just part of the dialogue. And they're like, all right, well, how are we going to shoot this? All right, well, let's just shoot it wide. Let's just see what happens. It's going to bother me now because you mentioned it, that happens so regularly. It's also a lot of, you can tell where like when people are improvising a scene that they will do a lot of jokes with somebody's back to the camera where it's somebody's dirty in the shot. It just means that you're focused on somebody else, two people having a conversation. You're focused on one person's face, but you catch in the shot, you catch the shoulder and like the jawbone and some hair of the person who they're talking to for a frame of reference when you're watching a movie. And a lot of times you can watch that person's talking, but you don't see their actual jaw moving at all. And they're doing the same shit there. But I always just assumed that it was, no, that dialogue was all there. Or like they were improvising it right there in the moment, and this is just how they decided to do it.
Nope.
Ugh, that's frustrating. So you really think that they, like a whole nother team of writers came on afterwards and like, all right, well, let's beat these jokes.
I don't know if it's a whole other team of writers, but it definitely feels like a separate endeavor.
Yeah.
I think there's some story I remember of that Patton Oswalt talks about how he was just brought in to essentially improv ADR for some animated movie where they're like, hey, we made this whole movie and it's not funny enough. So your character just like, could you just like come in and say some wild, funny things?
Cool.
That we can drop anywhere.
That sounds great. have you ever done ADR before?
Not in the way that we are talking about it right now, where you're inventing new dialogue, but when we were filming Agents of Cracked, a series that we did for Cracked.com many, many years ago, there are a couple of things that I think it's at the end of the first season, a scene filmed at the beach in Santa Monica where we're outside and the audio is so terrible because of the wind and the ocean that everything you see us doing is me and Michael doing it later, just watching our own mouths move and doing it in post. Like, we went to Abe's house and listened to the raw of us over and over again, and then just tried to match our mouths as best as we could.
Yeah, that's traditional ADR. I've done it for some movies. I used to be in the movies. Did you know that, Dan?
Yeah, you're an actor.
And Queens Boulevard.
And when you go into like a sound studio and you have headphones and everything, and then they show you on a big screen and they're like, all right, we're going to play you. And it's like, beep, beep, beep. And then you watch the scene a couple of times and you try and match it. And a lot of times they're like, all right, you're actually out of breath for this part. So if you could get out of breath, and you're like, oh, okay. And so you're just like jumping around in the room for a little while, and then you go and you do it again.
Awesome.
So that it feels authentic to the scene. Or they're like, actually, like, you're in this part, you're kind of like more, you've got like a little fear in your voice, and you have to be like, okay, how does that translate? Oh, you want higher? I will do higher. And then like, just like trying to figure out what they want. And sometimes they don't even want you to match what you did before. If you try and copy it exactly, they're like, no, we need it a little different. That doesn't feel authentic.
Oh yeah. Do what you did on the day, but like better acting now.
Right.
Act a little. Your face acting is doing great, but be a better.
Yeah, the voice.
Have a better actor say the lines.
it's really tough to do. I found it very challenging.
Absolutely.
Trying to match your own lips. Because you and I talk fairly fast, and we don't enunciate. And so try to match up what you're saying with your own face. You're like, no, that guy's drunk.
Yeah. How am I supposed to match him saying comedy writer? Comedy writer. Comedy writer.
Comedy writer. Comedy writer. I watched a movie recently called Home Team. Are you familiar with this movie?
No.
This is the story of Sean Payton when he had to leave the Saints for a season because of Bounty Gate.
Okay.
The Saints, real quick background, the Saints got in a lot of trouble because they were giving their players bounties to injure players from the other teams.
Oh.
And because Sean Payton was the head coach, whether or not he was responsible for it, he's the one who takes the fall for it. So he was suspended from the league for a season.
Was football tired of all the old terrible practices associated with the sport? We've still got people innovating the game.
Yeah, people finding new and unique ways to make it terrible and unlikable. So Kevin James plays Sean Payton, and I don't know how this movie got made, because it carries Sean Payton in such a favorable light. The jokes are absolutely abysmal, and the cast isn't terrible, but it is just ball washing. It's like Sean Payton ball washing. It looks like he wrote the script.
Wow.
And this was a movie where you're talking about, you don't mind coming into a movie late. This was a very long movie, and a movie where I was like, halfway through, I was like, you know what? I don't need to watch this whole thing. And then I just did kind of like I moved my cursor up a little bit. I'd watch about 10 minutes, move my cursor up a little bit, watch some more. And then I watched the end. I'm like, yeah, I get it. Got it.
When did this movie come out?
Recently. This is Wow. It came out this year.
Kevin James has an interesting career.
Yeah, I don't totally get it. I think he's a very funny guy, but he's done some real dog shit.
Yeah. I think he's a very funny guy. He did a stand-up special was the first thing I knew about him. That Sweat the Small Stuff.
Yeah.
That I thought was great. Just like an incredible hour of stand-up. And then he was like always the best part of whenever he showed up on Raymond. And then King of Queens. I was like, yeah, he's a funny guy. He's definitely a funny guy. I don't like that style of show at the time. But, like, I recognized him as a funny person. And now he's pivoted to movie star. And sometimes he's serious actor man. And I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't totally get it either. He does do, yeah, this is, it's supposed to be a lot of comedy in this movie. Because what he does is he basically goes and he coaches a kid's, his son's football team in this league this year when he's suspended. Mm-hmm. This is a Happy Madison production. So like, it feels like there's some credibility behind it, but
yeah,
man, you know what I got the same feeling from? That movie where John Hamm's wife wrote a film where she and Adam Scott were like other people's children or something like that.
Yeah. Other people's something.
other people's kids.
Is it other people's kids?
It felt just like that, where it's like you surround them with this a great group of people. They're kind of playing weird roles that don't really fit their type. And then you've got one person in it where you're like, what? What is going on here? What bizarre world is this where this movie got made? And this one just had that same energy. I don't understand it at all. You should absolutely watch
it. Yeah, I'll check it out. Friends with Kids.
Friends with Kids. Got it.
I wonder if people are going to be mad at you.
Because
that movie that John Hamm's wife wrote or whatever.
Didn't she write it?
I think she wrote and directed it, but she's in it. I think she was doing other stuff before she was John Hamm's girlfriend, though.
Yeah, I'll take it. That's fine. You're probably right. This should be a learning moment for me. Everybody, preemptively say you're absolutely right. I should not have referred to her as John Hamm's wife.
Great. Especially because she never was.
Because she was his girlfriend. And you're all stickler for details.
Yeah, that's me. Well, the show is Quick Question. Our theme song is by the incredible Me Rex. Their digital album is available at merex.bandcamp.com. Find the show on Twitter at twitter.com/QQ_Soren and Dan. Find me at DLB_Inc. Soren at Soren_LTD. Email the show QQ with Soren and Daniel@gmail.com. We also have a Patreon. You can support us there if you want. We answer one exclusive question a month from you, our listeners, on Patreon. And it's great, great fun. Okay, bye.
I've got a quick question for you, alright? I wanna hear your thoughts, I wanna know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you, alright? The answer's not important, I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite?
How did you get? If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here. I think you'll have a great time here.